Hermes and IKEA can score the same 78 out of 100 on a brand health survey. One charges $10,000 for a handbag, the other charges $9.99 for a shelf. If a single number can describe both as equally healthy, the number is not describing health, it is hiding structure. This is not a data quality problem, it is a geometry problem.
Right.
Welcome to the deep dive. I mean, today's mission is, it's ambitious, but completely necessary. We are basically going to completely dismantle the way the business world measures brand health.
Yeah, we have to. It's overdue.
Exactly. And for you listening, our sources for this exploration include an analytical brief, a few strategic positioning documents, and this really foundational collection of 20 research papers on Zenodo.
Yeah, the ones mapping the mathematical boundaries of brand perception.
Right. So before we get into the weeds, lay it out for us. What's the roadmap here?
Three things. The 78-100 illusion why identical scores can describe structurally opposite brands. The math behind why this is unavoidable when you compress dimensions. And what to look at instead of the score.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because I want to look directly at the visual evidence that proves this this single score illusion.
Oh, absolutely. The visuals make it undeniable.
Right. So we need to paint a picture for you listening of exactly why a 78 out of 100 is basically meaningless without structural context.
Totally meaningless.
So imagine a chart showing Hermes and IKEA as two horizontal bars. Both stretch across the page, and they stop at exactly 78 on a single brand health scale.
Just completely identical.
Exactly. On the surface, identical. But beneath that, I want you to visualize both brands as eight-axis radar charts placed side by side.
Like those spiderweb charts.
Yeah. Have you ever seen those spiderweb charts in video games that show a character's stats? Picture that.
That's the perfect way to visualize it.
So on the Hermes radar chart, the shape is incredibly skewed to the left side. It's hitting these huge, towering peaks on the semiotic, narrative, ideological, cultural, and temporal dimensions.
Right.
But then it's completely flat, like almost zeroed out on the economic dimension.
And then, you know, you look at IKEA's radar chart, right? And you see the exact inverse.
The exact inverse.
Yeah, IKEA's shape is incredibly tall on the economic dimension, but it's virtually flat on all those dimensions where Hermes dominates.
Wow.
These two radar charts are quite literally mirror images of each other. But that top aggregate score of 78...
it sees none of it.
Absolutely none of that structural opposition. It just, it averages everything into this featureless gray paste.
Right. But okay, you mentioned these specific dimensions, and I want to make sure we aren't just throwing academic terms at the listener.
Sure, yeah. Let's ground it.
What do these peaks and valleys actually look like in the real world? Like, start with Hermes. Why are they spiking so high on the temporal and semiotic axes?
Well, the eight dimensions map the entirely different ways a human brain perceives value.
Mm-hmm.
Hermes is it's a brand built almost exclusively on heritage and scarcity.
Right, the exclusivity factor.
Exactly. When we look at their dimensional profile, they boast this massive temporal score of 9.5 out of 10.
And temporal means?
The temporal dimension measures a brand's historical anchor. Hermes has centuries of accumulated cultural weight. They're in some passing trend, you know.
Yeah.
They are perceived as a permanent fixture of luxury.
Okay, that makes sense. And what about semiotic?
Their semiotic score is also a 9.5. Semiotics is really about visual identity and sensory shortcuts.
Like the orange box.
Yes. The Hermes orange box, or the specific silhouette of a Birkin bag, it functions as a self-sustaining cultural symbol even if you just completely remove the logo.
Wow, right.
Plus, their cultural score is a 9.0 because they are so deeply integrated into the lore of high society.
Okay, but then I see their economic score is a 3.0, and I look at that and think, wait, Hermes is incredibly profitable.
Oh, massively profitable.
So how can their economic dimension be deliberately weak? Like, are we defining economic as profitability, or is it something else?
Yeah, that's a huge misconception. We are defining the economic dimension as accessibility and frictionless exchange. Hermes utilizes a strategy called structural absence. They intentionally restrict accessibility. You know, you can't just walk into a store and buy their most famous products.
Right, you have to be on a wait list for years.
Exactly. They create deliberate purchasing friction to generate this massive gravitational pull of exclusivity.
That's fascinating.
So their low economic score isn't a failure.
Right.
Right? It is the very engine of their desirability.
Okay, now contrast that architecture with IKEA.
Right, so IKEA is built on democratic access and functional clarity. They have a dominant economic score of 9.0 because their entire model is about removing friction.
Lowering prices, flat packing the furniture.
Exactly. Maximizing mass distribution. And they also have a strong experiential score of 7.0. Think of like the physical maze of the store.
Or the distinct smell of the Swedish meatballs.
Exactly. It's a highly curated experience.
But they don't have the heritage of Hermes.
They do not. They are deliberately moderate on the temporal and ideological dimensions. They both sit around a 6.0.
Because they aren't trying to be an exclusive centuries-old club.
Right. But when you take these highly specialized, perfectly engineered, inverse architectures.
And you just average them together.
Right. You average them, and both spit out a 78. That single number hides their strategic vulnerabilities, their competitive moats, and crucially, their proper investment allocations.
You know, relying on this single score is like judging human health solely by BMI.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Like a world-class bodybuilder and a sedentary couch potato might have the exact same BMI number. The number isn't wrong, but it absolutely destroys the structural information you need to make a health decision.
Yes, precisely.
Because if you put them both on the same treadmill program just because their BMI is identical, you're going to get wildly different, potentially disastrous results.
If you treat those two bodies the same, you break one of them.
Wow.
And yet, marketing teams do this every single day. They pull a competitor benchmarking report, look at two identical aggregate scores, and just assume both brands are operating in the exact same competitive lane.
And that they require the exact same strategic interventions.
Right. It's dangerous.
I hear this, and my first instinct is to just assume the data collection is flawed. Like, marketing teams might look at that 78 and think, well, we just aren't surveying enough people.
That's always the first reaction.
Right. Like, give me 10,000 more respondents, or let's ask slightly better survey questions, and the score will just fix itself. Is this just a case of bad data?
This is the most crucial realization of the entire exploration. This is not a data failure.
It's not.
No. Adding 10 million more survey respondents will not fix the problem. This is a mathematical limit.
Okay, explain that.
We can look at a phenomenon in color science called spectral minimerism to understand why.
Spectral minimerism?
Yeah. In optics, you can have two light sources with completely different physical compositions of wavelengths, entirely different physical light spectra.
Okay.
Yet when that light hits the human eye, it produces the exact same perceived color.
So the light is physically different in the room, but my brain sees the exact same shade of yellow.
Exactly. The physical reality is highly complex. But human vision compresses an infinite dimensional light spectrum down into just three biological receptors.
Our cones.
Right, our L, M, and S cones. Because we only have three receptors to process infinite complexity, the visual system is essentially forced to average the wavelengths out.
Wow.
The structural differences become completely invisible to the observer. That is spectral metamerism.
And the brand health score is doing the exact same thing to brand structure.
Exactly.
We are taking a complex, eight-dimensional object and forcing it through a tiny, restrictive, one-dimensional lens.
Right. And to understand why this is an unsolvable geometric limit, not just a survey error, we have to look at the Johnson-Lindenstrauss lemma.
Okay, the Johnson-Lindenstrauss lemma. That sounds intense.
It's a foundational mathematical proof in high-dimensional geometry. Basically, the lemma proves that if you take points in a high-dimensional space, like 10 distinct brands floating in our eight-dimensional perceptual space.
Okay, tracking.
And you try to compress them down to a single dimension, like a 1 to 100 aggregate score, while trying to preserve the relative distances between those brands, you will mathematically fail.
Just flat out fail.
Yes. The proof shows that compressing eight dimensions to one requires a spatial distortion exceeding 152% for just 10 brands.
Wait. 152%?
Yes. And if you are looking at a realistic competitive set of 50 brands, the distortion is nearly 198%.
Hold on. 198%. That sounds mathematically impossible to someone outside of data science. How can a distortion be over 100%?
It's a spatial concept.
Right. Like, what does that actually mean in reality for the brands sitting on a CMO's dashboard?
Well, it means the concept of distance between two brands is entirely shattered. Imagine two brands that are architecturally light years apart in reality.
Like Hermes and IKEA. Completely different audiences, different values.
Exactly. A 198% distortion means that when you compress them onto a flat line, those two radically different brands might end up right next to each other, appearing as identical twins. Conversely, two brands that are highly similar in reality might be flung to opposite ends of the dashboard. When you compress eight dimensions into a single score, the other seven dimensions do not simply vanish harmlessly.
Where do they go?
they collapse into what mathematicians call a null space.
A null space. So the null space is essentially a graveyard for structural context.
That's exactly what it is. It is the invisible area where all the critical architectural differences, the specific weights a brand carries in the semiotic, narrative, ideological, experiential, social, economic, cultural, and temporal dimensions. They're all just buried.
That's terrifying.
To put a hard number on this information loss, a standard 5-point grading scale only retains 11.6% of the available information.
You're kidding.
No. The other 88.4% is utterly annihilated in the null space. A 78-100 brand health score is not wrong because of bad data. It is wrong because of geometry.
And because it's geometry, there is literally no tweaking the algorithm or, you know, buying a more expensive software suite to magically fix it. You cannot cheat math.
You really can't.
So what does this all mean for a strategist? Are you saying that if they look at two identical brands, they might launch a campaign that saves one brand and accidentally triggers our collapse of the other?
Yes. The distortion is not random, it is systematic. That is what makes it dangerous.
Because it hides the specific dimensions that could literally kill a company.
Let me introduce a concept here called an absorbing boundary. Think of a critical dimension, like a brand's ideological trust.
Okay.
If that trust drops to zero, it hits an absorbing boundary, meaning you cannot recover. You can't multiply zero.
Right, it's game over.
Once it's gone, the brand mathematically cannot survive. But if that ideological dimension is collapsing inside the invisible null space, your aggregate 78 out of 100 score won't show the fatal drop until the company is already bankrupt.
Wow. So a strategist might apply a mass market economic promotion, like a massive discount code, to a brand that actually relies on structural absence and exclusivity to survive.
Exactly. They see a flat score and apply a flat solution. The research papers refer to this fundamental problem as the difference between rasterized and vectorized management.
Rasterized versus vectorized. You know, this reminds me of digital image files.
Oh, how so?
Well, a rasterized image, like a JPEG, is a flattened projection made of static pixels. If you try to zoom in or scale it up, it immediately gets blurry and pixelated because the underlying data is permanently gone.
Right.
You're just looking at a flat illusion. But a vectorized image, like an SVG file, doesn't use static pixels. It uses mathematical formulas to draw the shapes. So you can scale an SVG infinitely, and it never loses its structural integrity.
That is exactly it. Traditional brand management is inherently rasterized. It's lossy human projection.
A flattened JPEG.
Yes. A brand manager takes a complex, eight-dimensional entity and flattens it into a simplified narrative, a single aggregate score, a single slide on a pitch deck.
And then the creative team takes that flattened JPEG and tries to expand it into a massive global campaign.
And they are guessing at the missing 88% of the information. Vectorized brand management requires using the full eight-dimensional spectral profile as your absolute single source of truth. You never make a structural decision based on the flattened projection.
Okay, I want to take this out of the theoretical math realm and see what happens when a strategist actually manages a brand as a flattened JPEG instead of a vectorized SVG.
Sure.
Let's mentally map a stark real-world consequence. Let's look at Erewhon.
Oh, Erewhon is the definitive case study for why the null space is so incredibly dangerous.
Walk us through it.
If we map out Erewhon's specific eight-dimensional architecture, we see they're incredibly strong on the experiential dimension with a 9.0.
Right. Walking into their grocery store is a highly curated aesthetic event.
Exactly. They're also massive on the social dimension with an 8.5. Holding one of their $20 smoothies is a potent status symbol for a very specific demographic.
Right. Pure status.
But here's the critical vulnerability hiding in their profile. They have a temporal score of only 2.5. Out of all the canonical brands analyzed in these sources, that is the absolute lowest temporal score recorded.
Erewhon and IKEA are both healthy brands. One has 80 years of temporal depth. The other has a 2-year trend cycle. The score cannot tell you which is which.
Exactly. A single number score would drop Erewhon right next to IKEA on a competitive map, basically implying they have the exact same stability.
But their profiles are completely alien to each other. I mean, Erewhon is a pure status performance built entirely on right now.
Right.
It is pure present tense social signaling without any historical anchor to tie it down.
And social velocity is the fastest moving of all eight dimensions. Social perception shifts can move a full point in a matter of weeks, whereas temporal or ideological shifts take decades.
Decades, right.
This raises the existential question, what happens to a brand whose entire architectural weight rests on present tense social signaling?
When the cultural spotlight just moves to the next big thing.
Right. When the status signal inevitably fades, Erewhon has almost zero temporal dimension to fall back on. Their architecture dictates their survival strategy.
Whereas IKEA has 80 years of temporal depth to buffer a crisis, a scandal, or a shift in consumer trends.
Erewhon does not.
Hmm.
But the single number on the CMO's dashboard hides that fatal architectural vulnerability completely.
So if you are the CMO of Erewhon and your dashboard says you are a healthy 78, you think you are safe.
You think you're golden.
You're completely blind to the fact that you're balancing a skyscraper on a toothpick. It's terrifying when you realize billions of dollars of marketing budgets are being allocated globally based on a metric that is entirely blind to that kind of structural risk.
It really is.
But, you know, we can't just break the measurement toy and leave you, the listener, empty-handed. How does a brand manager or a strategist actually apply this vectorized knowledge tomorrow morning? Like, what is the practical replacement for the score?
Well, spectral brand theory is not here to replace the strategist's qualitative tools. You know, you don't have to throw out David Aker's brand identity pyramid or Kapper's prism.
Okay, good.
Rather, it is the missing mathematical measurement layer for those frameworks. Instead of asking a binary question like, is my brand strong? The eight-dimensional profile forces you to look at exactly where it is strong and weak.
Right.
The proper question to ask your dashboard is 78 on which dimensions?
And the immediate follow-up question has to be, for which observer cohort? Because the sources make it explicitly clear that different groups of people don't just perceive the brand slightly differently.
No, not slightly.
They form entirely different perception clouds from the exact same signals.
Right. Perception is irreducibly observer-dependent. A tech loyalist and a political boycotter looking at Tesla are both observing the exact same brand signals in the market.
But their brains are constructing entirely different, irreconcilable perception clouds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And once you map those different clouds, you realize we must stop treating brand consistency as a flat binary metric where everything has to look exactly the same to everyone.
Right.
Instead, we have to start managing coherence type.
Meaning, we need to look at how the different perception clouds across your audience actually relate to one another, rather than forcing them to be identical.
Right. Take Hermes again. The research categorizes Hermes as having ecosystem coherence.
Ecosystem coherence.
Yep. Different cohorts perceive very different things about Hermes. Some see the heritage, some see the pure wealth signaling, some see the artisanal craftsmanship.
But they all fit together.
Exactly. Those varying perceptions are functionally interdependent. They reinforce each other.
Right.
It is a diverse but highly resilient ecosystem.
And IKEA.
IKEA, conversely, has signal coherence. Almost everyone, regardless of their demographic, perceives the exact same democratic functional design from IKEA.
Yep.
It's highly uniform. Both are completely coherent, but they have structurally different resilience properties during a crisis. Ecosystem coherence absorbs and isolates a crisis within one specific cohort, while signal coherence transmits a crisis uniformly across the entire massive audience.
Man, here is a massive operational problem that stems directly from this. Every single agency and marketing department is currently rushing to integrate AI, right?
Oh, yeah. Everywhere.
Here's where it gets really interesting. What happens when we try to fee a 70-80-100 score into an AI tool to build a campaign?
It is a recipe for catastrophic brand misalignment.
Because it's a flattened JPEG.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence tools, specifically large language models, they require dimensional inputs to function properly. They operate on structured, multidimensional prompts.
Right.
A single aggregate score is mathematically useless as a specification for a machine learning model. It lacks the geometric complexity required to define a brand's unique shape.
So if you feed an LLM a one-dimensional prompt, like generate a campaign for a premium 78 out of 100 brand,
you are virtually guaranteeing a hallucinated, rasterized output.
Yeah.
Because the AI is starved of dimensional context, it will simply invent the missing seven dimensions based on its own generic training data.
It's just guessing.
Yes. It will completely divorce the resulting campaign from your brand's actual architectural reality.
Mm-hmm.
To utilize AI effectively and safely, you must feed it the full vectorized eight-dimensional spectral profile.
Bringing this all together into immediate, actionable advice for the brand managers, strategists, and CMOs listening right now. Your immediate action is to pull your last brand health report.
Yes. Do it today.
Look at that single aggregate number and ask your data team exactly which dimensions are collapsed into that score. Request a full 8-dimensional breakdown before your next agency briefing.
Absolutely.
If your data team or your agency cannot provide one, that is itself a structural signal of a flawed, rasterized methodology. You cannot afford to make million-dollar decisions based on an optical illusion.
Episode 2 covers what to do with this insight, strategically, how to connect dimensional analysis to the frameworks your team already uses. If you want the formal proof of exactly how much information a single score loses, Episode 3 goes through the mathematics with precision.
To leave you with one final thought, we talked about the danger of the null space. If brand damage eventually hits an absorbing boundary, meaning a dimension like your ideological credibility drops to zero and can mathematically never be recovered, and your single number dashboard can't even see that dimension until it's too late, what invisible damage is your brand accumulating right now in the null space?